Good evening, everyone. Was really nice to sit for half an hour in the middle of so much activity. And even the first minutes of my sitting were involved with my cat continuing activity. But then she settled down and oof, I could just sit. It was really nice. And it's nice to see everyone here. I really came sitting with the intention to not know what was here and now, to just experience with the willingness to just experience whatever arose. And that's not always easy. I've trained so much in it, however, that it's easier than it was when I first started this practice in some respects. Some respects was easier when I first started because I didn't know what to expect. Now I know what to expect, or I think I do, and that makes it more stuff I have to get rid of. So I kind of renewed that intention to just sit, even with the cat moving around and taking breaths to come here. I had a busy day and we don't, when we sit online, we don't begin with the chant that we begin with during retreats of this Dharma, infinitely subtle, incomparably profound, rarely encountered, even in millions of ages. But I do think of it, the infinitely subtle, so subtle that we miss it, and that's why it's rarely encountered. It's not that it's rare. It's rare that we are open to encountering it, is actually what the thing is. And it has to do with, so I noticed today, I've had a friend who's had health issues and actually since the end of November and was hospitalized and had surgery and then is now like in a phase of recuperating, but is still in a different hospital in like a recovery rehabilitation place section. And so this week I learned that he could have visitors, and I decided I would go visit him. But I didn't really want to. I mean, I wanted to, but I had a resistance to it. That I couldn't really verbalize, it was just like, oh, it's just one more thing I have to do. And, I already went to a funeral and then I had to do other things and appointments and then just, stuff. So, I finally decided, okay, I'll do it today. I'll go. Even though I had this excuse, well, no, I have to give a Dharma talk. I have to sit. I don't have much time in the afternoon because you can only go in the afternoon to visit this guy, the hospital. But he called me yesterday and left a message saying, yeah, because I had talked to his wife, and yeah, my wife, Valerie said we're going to come. I was wondering when you're coming. So now I really had to come. Yeah. So I arranged to go today. And I had this resistance, though. But as soon as I made the appointment to go and just said I would do it, the resistance dropped. The struggle that comes with the resistance dropped. And it made it really easy to just go there without any expectations of what I would find, what it would be like, taking time out of my afternoon. It didn't really matter taking time out of my afternoon. If I'd go with the willingness of just being with what is, there's no expectation of what is. And actually, when I got there, I met him and his wife and his sister-in-law in the hallway. They were going down to the cafeteria at the restaurant at the hospital. So we had a nice visit, and he actually looked much better than he looked when I saw him in November before he had all his hospitalization and everything. And it was all fine. And it was so easy. What was making it difficult was the resistance to doing it. And this is something I know, and we know this, and we say it all the time in our practice. And yet it comes up all the time, repeatedly, whether it's resisting washing the dishes or resisting, paying a bill, or resisting going to visit a friend who's in the hospital, whatever it is, when we can drop the resistance, drop the attachment. It's really about being attached to an idea, actually. And it becomes, sometimes we say acceptance, but it's not acceptance like being resigned. It's just accepting the situation as it is, and not having an idea about how it should be or how we want it to be. Different, something like that. And there we have this koan in our tradition of, I can't even remember who the teacher is or what collection it's in, but a monk asks the teacher, as is always the case in these stories, asks the master, how can I enter this practice? How can I practice Zen, something like that? And they're outside walking on a pilgrimage or something, and the teacher says, do you hear the murmuring stream, the river murmuring? And the monk says, yes, I do. And the teacher says, enter there. And this is such a, infinitely subtle teaching, that the entry, or we say the practice, is right here, right now, whatever is arising at this moment. We think that it has to be something else, or okay, I can't prepare for a Dharma talk and be ready to sit tonight if I go visit my friend in the hospital. Well, that's completely absurd when you say it like that, right? But that's how we function. We think, okay, well, I have to do this and that, and it has to be like this and that, and practice it. People often tell me that, something important is happening in their life, and so they can't practice. They're not in a good space to sit. And that's the moment when we need to sit. And that's actually a wonderful entryway to sitting. Just sit with that then. Just that's the entrance. Do you hear the mountain? Do you hear the stream murmuring? Enter there, whatever it is. And this is where, we find freedom. And everything is full of possibility then, because we become free of our stories, our fictions, and the effort that we have to make to try to know what's happening, organize it, make it happen like we want it to be. That effort is really tiring. And that then is something we carry around with our identity, which makes it then we feel completely bound. We don't feel free. We feel like we have no choice. Whereas if we just put those things down. So, I was feeling, oh, I have this obligation to go visit this guy in Paris in the hospital. I mean, this guy is like one of my oldest friends in Paris. And he's, ailing. And he sits in his hospital all day long by himself. Probably he read, I know he's a journalist, so he reads all the newspapers he can get his hands on and watches the continuous news on the television, probably. Why would I not go? Why would I not? That's an entry to the practice. That is the practice right there. But because I'm looking for something else, I miss it. And as soon as I do it, that's it. It's the murmuring stream. It's right there. That's the entrance. And that's where we then can experience, like I said, when we see things as they are, then it's all possibility. Anything is possible. Full of possibility. That's what we also, mean by when we talk about emptiness in our practice. We usually think that it means, oh, it's empty. There's nothing. And that can be cause for anxiety, fear. We think it's boring. We think then it's not stimulating. We're giving everything up, then there's nothing. But actually, emptiness is fullness. It's full of possibility. Everything is it. It's not fixed by any limitations. So then we see the fullness, the beauty, the wonder. In Japanese, there's this word myo, MYO, which is, it can be wondrous, mysterious, subtle. Often in Japanese art, whether it's painting, poetry, acting even, they work a lot with this notion of myo. Mysterious. When we say a true piece of, a haiku, for example, a brilliant haiku expresses that. That's what it expresses is mio. This subtle, rarely encountered wonder, mystery, beauty, that when we no longer have our stories and our fixed ideas about things, then we can experience that. Then we can see it. The extraordinary wonder of a piece of grass, or the extraordinary wonder of the bus passing in the street. When I was coming from the hospital tonight, leaving to come back home, my friend's wife was also going home. And she had some packages and things, and she asked if I could help. She would walk with me, and I would help her carry the things. And we were going in the same direction, but we had kind of a long walk to the metro. And so we came to a bus stop, and she said, "Should we try to take the bus? There was a bus arriving." And I said, "Well, if it goes where we want to go, yeah, sure." So we asked, and the guy said, "Oh, no, I'm not going to Nation, but I'm." And he said, but he told us the buses that did. And we said, okay, fine. And he closed the door. And then he opened the door again and he said, but if you get on this bus, I'll take you a certain distance and then I turn, but then you don't have as far to walk. Which was really nice, So we said, okay. And so I was getting out my pass and my friend, she bid her pass. And he said, no. You don't have to do your pass. You just get on, I'll just give you a ride. Which was really so amazing, you know, completely unexpected and so sweet. So, okay, so we didn't have to pay for that bus ride. He stopped and he told us where to get off, and I knew where to go actually because I know the walk, but and he said, you just go there, whatever. And just the incredible beauty of that moment. Instead of being the whole idea of taking a bus had not occurred to me. So, okay, I was already open to whatever, no expectations. And then I was certainly, when he closed the door, it never occurred to me that he would say, oh, just get on and ride a few stops and you don't have to pay. Amazing. And it was like the subtle, rarely encountered beauty of that person, that moment, on just an ordinary Paris bus on a Thursday night, you know. But we have to be open, you know. So what's that is not rare. Encountering the beauty of the moment is not rare. What's rare is our openness to it, our attention, our presence. And that has to do with letting go of our resistance to it. Instead of being angry, oh, it's the wrong bus. He slammed the door in my face. Whatever, you know, all the other stuff we could have. Being open, just open to it, of whatever arises. And then the walk with my friend, carrying her heavy packages. No problem. I wasn't even paying attention to if I knew I would be on time for the Dharma talk, but I didn't know how much in advance I would arrive. Then I arrived home and my son was here. He's never here and wanted to talk to me about something. And I said, well, you know, I have 30 minutes here, 35 minutes before I have to sit, you know, and I haven't done anything about a Dharma talk. And he said, oh, okay. But, and then he continued talking. And then while we're talking, my daughter calls. And okay, so actually, at 10 minutes to eight, so 10 minutes before the sitting, I could finally come and sit down and maybe just sit for a few minutes before sitting. But it was okay. Because I had done this process of letting go of resistance at the beginning of the day, for some reason, everything, you know, it was just so much easier the day. I say it for some reason. I know why. Because I know that the resistance is, like we say, pain is unavoidable. Suffering is optional, and the suffering comes when we resist. I'm not saying that my day was would have been suffering had I not had I resisted, but it certainly made it much easier. Certainly. And made me have real conversations with both of my children. Shorter than we would have liked, but actually, no, it was fine. Everybody was happy. And I'll see my son later. He went out for dinner. He'll come back. I'll see him. No problem. So this Mio is kind of a this wondrous heart of being. Something like that. The true essence, the true nature, we say sometimes. And we say it's mysterious because it can't be known. As soon as we know it and say it's something, then it's not that. And all our practice is about is clarifying that. It's not making the mystery clear, it's clarifying that there's mystery. Something like that. And opening again and again and again and letting go, letting go, letting go. And really just coming to sit with the willingness to experience things as they are, just right here, right now. And when it's the murmuring stream, or when it's the bus passing in the street, visiting a friend in the hospital, even, in this absolutely mad, mad world of ours, even all of that madness, it doesn't mean we like it. It doesn't mean that we're not worried. It doesn't mean that we don't care. But if we can, sometimes I marvel actually at how sometimes I'm like, really? Am I not really getting all worked up about this? There's stuff that's really bad going on, And I do sometimes get worked up about it. But generally, even when I get worked up about it, I come to this place of just this. And when I do that, it's almost like I can see, I have a completely different view of the madness. I can see it for what it is. Madness. And I know with madness like this, this too is impermanent. There's other kinds of madness, but this current madness, this too will end. And our experience is that it generally ends badly, or ends. It become, it's a constant transformation, endless, ongoing, and we know the effect of action and effect. We know the karmic consequences, and so we know that it can only end badly. The karmic consequences of war are bad, in the sense of death, suffering, killing, harm, violence, all of that. And then sometimes, well, we'd know too that on those killing grounds, flowers grow. They do. But we don't know what it is, and that's what the mio aspect is. We don't know. That's what not knowing is. We don't know. And when we can really, truly not know, it changes our experience of that. Of both the flowers that grow and of the killing ground. It changes it when we truly don't know. So maybe I will stop there and hear if you have anything to share. Question, comment about this or something else.
Hello, everyone. Good night. Good evening. I was thinking here in this resistance, calling it that way, reminds me of the and you said when we drop it, it's a kind of it's freedom, it's a release. Remind me of the. Keeping in mind the second noble truth, the cause of suffering, which is this, of course, it's the ignorance of not being really present, but the engine of this of that is it's craving, it's, and resistance is a kind of craving. So, and so, gets me at this. Keep remembering, it's a kind of remembering the practicing in almost each moment when we are suffering. What I am craving at, it's what's the cause of suffering? But at the same time, I was thinking, of course, you're not saying that all the time we are in this freedom of being in the here and now, because sometimes we might need to really prepare ourselves with everything we know and not be at least as practitioners, sometimes not knowing it's not the way, because we know that we are going to fail. For instance, if I go to visit a person in an hospital, that really annoys me, because she annoys me. And I know that she's dying, and I can't say anything unkind, and I can't just go and see what's happening. I have to prepare myself with everything that I know to. So it's interesting to how everything is changing, and it's not even. Of course, if I'm a Buddha, there's no problem with that. But for us as practitioners, this thing of impermanence, it's a kind of process. Sometimes it's Okay, thank you.
Yes, absolutely. It's like the breath, in and out. And when we do the breath practice where our mind drifts and then we come back, it really is. Yeah, it's impermanent. And the, when we talk about not knowing, it's not. So, yeah, of course, we have to pay attention and be aware of the situation that we're in, wherever we are. The people and the place and the circumstances. And but like my example of going to see my friend, I didn't realize until I got there that I didn't expect him to be up walking. I didn't expect his wife to be there. I certainly didn't expect his sister-in-law to be there. And I got out of the elevator and I met them standing right there. He was walking. His wife was there and his sister-in-law was there. So it was like I hadn't realized, of course, it wasn't like I was thinking, I don't expect his wife to be there. I don't expect his sister-in-law to be there. But I had not expected him to be walking. And so there, suddenly, oh, okay. Had I been really fixed on the idea that he shouldn't be walking, I would have, said, "Why are you walking? You're not supposed to be walking. Get a wheelchair or something." So we did. Of course, I did know I was going to the hospital. I had asked him, "Can I bring you anything?" I knew that he wasn't really supposed to be eating things, so I didn't offer to bring him a cake or something. He can't drink, he can't have coffee. So it was like, well, I wasn't going to bring him a bottle of whiskey or a coffee or something. So I brought him a newspaper. He said, oh, you could bring me Le Monde, which is the evening newspaper. So I did, I was, I knew where I was going, however, it made it much more free and easy when I dropped my expectations of what I would find or even what it involved to go there. I didn't know what we would talk about. I don't know what, he's been in the hospital since November 30th, basically. So I don't know, so we do have to know what the circumstances are in the sense of it's not about being dumb. We're ignoring things. It's about not being attached to our ideas about it. Being open to what is that is not our story about it, something like that.
Yeah, because it's not being aware, in some sense, ignoring what's happening, that it's going to condition the craving and the fixations and
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I mean, ignorance is one of the fixations, right? You know, it's like being fixed on that, on not wanting to see, or but you know, it's not always, it's not a volonté, it's not like it's not like we are willing ourselves not to see, but there is some attachment to not wanting that, you know, aversion. One of the aversion is related to resistance. You know, aversion is one of the, what are they, the five, I forget what they're called, but
Entrances? No.
hindrances, absolutely, yeah.
Hello, everybody. I'd like to share something with you about well, about what we heard from you, Hoshi, and also from Miguel. I have a friend that older than me, and she had to leave a house because she couldn't pay anymore the expenses of the house. So she had the help of friends, and she's living in the, I don't know the name, a place, well, a house where the old people go and they are cared there. This friend, she has been a really important and great friend of me and of my son too. We had traveled together and do many things together, and now there she is in the in that house. She was a very active person. She loved music, travel, as I said. She liked to read, and she was an activist for the rights of the women, especially, and so on. I visit her. I used to visit her very often. At this moment, I visit her less and less and less because she hardly recognized me. She is not interested in nothing. If I phone her, she doesn't care about the mobile, so I phone to the principal phone, I mean, and she had to move to this phone. And she's very upset to move to the phone. And she told me, "Oh, don't phone. It's too much work to come to here. I don't want to come to here." And I feel really very guilty. It's the word. But I visit her less and less and less because it's like I, she. It's something like she is annoyed by visits. That's what I feel. Maybe I'm wrong. But she is annoyed about visits and she is annoyed about phone calls. Last time I was there, I brought her magazine that she was very interested before. And it was so hard, you know, to share and to see the magazine with her and to show her and to call for the interest of her to the subjects that were there. So I do feel very guilty, but I stopped to visit them. That's what I want to share with you. Thank you.
Thank you. And so the guilt is about because you think you should visit her, or what's the guilt? Yeah. Yeah. Even though you feel like she doesn't want you to visit.
It's resistance. It's my resistance to go through this feeling of annoying her. That's what I think.
Right.
And also because it's not very near, it's far, it's in the other side of the river, and it's not there, then we must take a bus to go there. It's all this together. And well, and the time passes and I don't go. Then I tried, the last time I tried to take someone with me, for not going just me, to see if it's more fun and more movement, you know, around her. Maybe she would be, but no, it doesn't work. So.
Yeah, you know, we sometimes say that guilt is a very self-absorbed emotion, meaning that there's a lot of me involved in guilt, which we understand completely. You know, I feel bad that about something. That I did something or I didn't do something or I should do something, or I said something, you know, whatever. There is a lot of I involved in it. And the way that, so we can look at that and think, okay, well, all of what you say is totally legitimate. You know, those are real reasons. Makes total sense, to, I'm sure, to everyone here listening, to not go, you know. And we, none of us, because we're not involved with it, we don't feel guilty about it, right? But it's easy for us to not feel guilty because we're not involved with it. So you could maybe, you know, what we can do in situations where we feel guilt is, okay, so what is this, who is this I who is so involved in what they should do or not do, or... What is this guilt about, really? If we empty, you know, if we take ourself out of it, then we might be able to, like you say, just accept not going, and for, just for what it is, or because the self is not involved, just go, you know, whether it's fun or not. Whatever, like you say, you can't get over her annoyance, you know, annoying. But if you're not involved, if the you is not involved, then those same things don't happen. This sounds really easy, but it's not, you know, when we have emotional things going on, ties and stuff. It's just something that we can look at then when we feel guilt, that we're actually making it more difficult for ourselves when we feel guilt and become in, you know, become really self-involved when there's guilt.
Good evening, everybody. Nice to see you all. This is a wonderful subject, I think. It's, in any case, it speaks to me. And I had a miraculous intervention about this last weekend. I have two lessons on the weekend, which I didn't, but they can't do it any other time. The one on Sunday is a lovely young woman who is motivated. She's in bad shape about English, but she's smart and we're moving ahead. And on Saturday, I have the opposite. I have a woman and her daughter who are, I walk into the house, it's all dark in there. It is so depressing. The woman is kind of one of those goofy, can't concentrate, oh, what are we doing, ha 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 thing. And her daughter of 16 on Saturday afternoon, it is in pajamas, which I don't think is a sign of liveliness. And the daughter is very depressed. I don't know if she j doesn't understand things or whatever, but in any case, that's the duo. And I don't want to go. 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 They give me nothing. I mean, it's a peasly, it wasn't for the money. She picked me up on the street, basically, and said, oh, we must learn English and everything. But I don't like it. I don't like it a lot. And last weekend, I went through the same process at Roshi and said, Debbie, either stop. Just say you can't do it, you're sick, you're moving, make something up, or change your attitude because this is ridiculous. I'm not going to wake up every Saturday morning. I got to come to text today and then I start. I don't want to go, I don't want to go. Switch. So I thought, okay, I'll really make an effort about this. I'm counting on the fact that she has several times missed the rendezvous. And the last time I said, this is the last time. If you can't be here, I don't hold it against you, but I'm not going to get ready for you every Saturday and then have you cancel me. So I was kind of like, maybe she'll cancel again. And she did. It was almost as, I mean, prayer. Really, it was almost like being in a church and saying, oh, please, God, make her cancel. And then I looked at my phone and she said, oh, I have a medical rendezvous, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. I was so excited and happy. I was like a child that, got Christmas or something. I don't know where I'm gonna, next week I can't. I don't know how this is gonna go, but I was so aware that I was making this miserable with my attitude. I mean, okay, so what? It's 1 hour. It's a kind of a walk from here, which is good for me to get out and walk around town instead of sitting in here reading on when it's in the cold. It's no big deal, but I had made this thing into a major. Ah, I can't stand her, and they're stupid. They don't do the work, and it was like, whoa. Then stop, either stop, and I feel this about what Anna was saying too. If it's really unbearable, don't do it, and don't feel bad about it. Whenever I'm in a situation like this with adult students, I say, if after 2 or 3 weeks. You or I feel that this is not for us, no explanation, no excuses, we quit. And you don't have to feel bad, and I won't feel bad. Because time is running out, and I'm not going to spend it doing something I hate. But this was really, it was so obvious to me that I was making a mountain out of a molehill, really. So thank you very much for bringing this up.
Well, and the same thing applies to things we like. It's not always stuff we don't like. It's that we become very attached to what we like and we want it to be happening, or we want it to be like we want it to be. It's all the stories, all the fixations, all of it. Any. And there's relief too in when, oh, I really want to have this kind of pastry at the bakery, and you get there and they don't have it. Or they do have it and you love it so much, and but as soon as we become attached to it, then there's only going to be disappointment and suffering. In one of his books, Genpo Roshi tells, gives the example of, well, he's commenting on the poem, The Perfect Way. So, and we also have the poem Perfect Way sitting on the screen with us. But the the perfect way is not difficult. It just dislikes picking and choosing. And so Genpo gives this example of, well, I walk into the sandwich place and I want a sandwich with, I forget what kind of cheese it is that he wants on it, cheddar or something. And they don't have cheddar. Well, I can either, make myself suffer and make them suffer, complain, argue, insult them, the people I'm with, tell them how crummy this place, this is such a terrible sandwich place, should never come here again, when they're very happy with the sandwiches they got. Or we can just say, okay, you don't have cheddar? Well, I'll take it without cheese, or I'll take it with that cheese. And okay, But if I'm fixed on one thing that I need and want, and which I believe that I need and I want, then oof, very, very problematic.
And it's a good example because food is a real telltale area where this can become, if I can't have this for my lunch, I'm going to have a miserable day sort of thing. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So our practices, when we say it's infinitely subtle, rarely encountered, and our practice is to just sit down with this intention of, and the willingness, it's actually a willingness to experience it as it is. Like my Dharma brother Scott, who is also a teacher, Scott Sensei, who says, are you willing to make your life just as it is be your practice? Are you willing? It's really about, okay, I'm willing to be open to this, just what it is. And he was saying this from the place of, he had two children, he had a full-time job, he had a wife, he lived in the north of England. He could not come very often to practice with his teacher, who was my teacher as well, Geno Roshi. And so, occasionally on a vacation week, he could come and do it, or he could get a weekend off somehow and come and practice, but it was very little. And he, it was horrible. It was difficult. He was frustrated, but he didn't want to leave his wife. He loved his children. He had to work. So it was kind of this bind. But then when he realized, well, am I willing to make this life with my wife and my job and my kids? And traveling back and forth from the north of England to Paris, and am I willing to make that my practice? It changed everything then. Because then it was just, that was just his practice. Infinitely subtle, It really is very subtle. And then it all becomes very wondrous, Oh. Wow, riding the Eurostar is a Dharma practice, Or not speaking French and coming here to these retreats in France is a, this is my practice. Instead of becoming frustrated, my teacher's French, this is bad. Why can't people speak English? And I don't speak French and I can't learn French. And he didn't, he just, we used to make fun of him because his Dharma name is in French. And it's, I mean, make fun of him. We used to joke. His Dharma name is Je suis l'océan. I am the ocean, right? But the way he pronounced it when he would say it was, it sounded like he was saying, I am lotion, like lotion that you put on your hands or something. Je suis lotion. Well, why not? He is lotion too, If he's the ocean, well, he's also lotion. So, yeah. Yeah. This willingness to just experience things as they are, to open to it, be open to it. Right in the midst of all of this madness, which is only madness compared to what we think of as sanity, you know. Well, if we have nothing else to add, this might be a good place to stop. Open to this.
Martin, you want to speak? No.
Yeah,
Yeah, okay.
I was a bit unsure, but I could. Yeah, there's a bit of time. Yeah, I just wanted to share that I've like what struck me more in this talk was this acceptance of like what is going on and trying to have less expectations. I'm trying to like have like I have this kind of idea of how I want to live my daily life, like trying to structure a bit more. And I feel like I'm still like missing out in a few spots, and it's like trying to like accept that, yeah, that it's, I don't know, part of the process of it. But it's sometimes a bit like crazy, or I feel like I'm a bit off track with what I want to accomplish in a way of my daily life. Yeah, so it's, yeah, this.
What do you mean by what you want to accomplish in your daily life? Like, what is an
Like
example?
just a few objectives for what I want to do, like try and sit, like go for walks, study, have some kind of like objectives, and I feel like in general having more clarity during the day, like during every day, which is sometimes I feel more. And other times less, and then I get frustrated that I don't have much clarity. But it, I also feel that it's something that needs to build up to, like, but in other, and then other times, it's, yeah, there's just, I don't know, a lot going on, or I'm also not very disciplined, so yeah.
So when you say, I get. Which, I don't know if you said frustrated, but when you feel like you don't have much clarity, you would like to have more clarity and you feel like you don't. In that moment, when you realize that, then there's clarity. You're clear that you're not being clear or you're not experiencing clarity or something, but you are. But you have this idea about what it is. Of course, then it it's fleeting, so then it disappears and you become foggy again. But at that moment, when you realize that, then that's clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, but then I don't like I can realize that I'm not clear, but then what I will act upon is probably the unclarity that
Right.
I'm clear about.
Right. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah. And it's true, that's where the discipline comes in, too. Yeah. Of discipline, whatever it is, of having a schedule or, whenever it is.
Yeah.
So when you
Yeah.
live, when you were, in a monastery in Southeast Asia, did you experience these same kind of things? Or was it easy because you didn't have to think about anything and
Yeah. Yeah, not so much. Like, I feel like adapting to where I'm living is kind of crucial at the moment. Like I'm with my grandmother and it's working quite well. But I feel like I need to just the routines of things. And I think food, especially something that's I can have quite an unconventional kind of diet, and I feel like this can sometimes like shock people a bit, because I've like they've been with monks more, so sometimes I cannot have dinner or like, and this is okay for me, and obviously for my grandmother it's probably more like, are you gonna have dinner or not? And I just say yes, I had dinner, if it I didn't, and so yeah, these kind of things, but yeah, it's going well.
yeah, great. I mean, that's the whole thing too, is just pay attention. Even noticing when you're not paying attention, and after the fact, of course, but yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a great practice, living with your grandmother. I mean,
Yeah.
that's a great practice.
Yeah. I feel like I'm in this tiny room now, which is quite, I feel the practice as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So should we stop?
Okay, yes, thank you.